find the passage there. Hebrews chapter 12, and we will read together verses 1 through 13. The version, it's kind of a weird way to put it, the version of the New International Version that I have is the newer one. It's the 2011. You might still have the 84 one. So there might be just some slight differences in what we read, but it all should go together pretty close. So Hebrews chapter 12, beginning at verse 1, and we'll read through verse 13. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. In your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood. And have you completely forgotten this word of encouragement that addresses you as a father addresses his son? It says, "My son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline, and do not lose heart when he rebukes you, because the Lord disciplines the one he loves, and he chastens everyone he accepts as his son. Endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as his children. For what children are not disciplined by their father? If you are not disciplined, and everyone undergoes discipline, then you are not legitimate, not true sons and daughters at all. Moreover, we have all had human fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them for it. How much more should we submit to the Father of spirits and live? They disciplined us for a little while as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our good in order that we may share in his holiness. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. Therefore, strengthen your feeble arms and weak knees. Make level paths for your feet, so that the lame may not be disabled, but rather healed." And so, may the Lord truly add his blessing to his word as we read it today. Well, as you might have guessed, especially with this picture here, that we're going to zero in on that concept of discipline. And in just a moment, I'll refer back to one of these verses that we just read in particular. And it's a saying that we've all heard, right? The expression, "no pain, no gain." Phrases most often associated with sports training, of course, other athletic endeavors, a lot of times bodybuilding and exercise. In fact, when I was looking at memes from which I got this, thank you, Google, there were a lot of memes that said "no pain, no gain" and had muscle-bound people. Even had one with Arnold, but I thought, nah, I better not show that one, so I didn't. But would they have barbells and things like that? A lot of it connected with weightlifting, especially bodybuilding and exercise. No pain, no gain, we're told. The recent Olympic Games, I think, are a great example and case in point. I mean, think about all of those athletes and how they had to be so dedicated to what it is that they were doing. And we've all heard the stories of people who spend literally years, hours a day, 12, 14, sometimes 18 hours a day practicing, working on their craft, whatever it might be, if it's the high beams or doing some sort of fancy skating maneuver, whatever it might be, that these people had to train hard and sacrifice greatly and pay a steep, steep price for the privilege of representing their country in Tokyo this past time. But of course, no pain, no gain is a truism for life itself. So that phrase, no pain, no gain, has been quoted metaphorically, or sometimes not, maybe rather literally, for practically every situation and circumstance in life. Now for me, what came to mind as what I think as the best illustration of this principle is found in a speech given by President John F. Kennedy nearly 60 years ago. Can you believe it? How time flies by. September 12, 1962, President Kennedy was at Rice University in Houston, Texas, where he announced the formation of the National Space Program. Now, the interesting thing is that he didn't use that phrase, no pain, no gain, but the principle was certainly eloquently stated when in his speech he spoke these words. But why, some say, the moon? Why choose this as our goal? And they may well ask, is that how he said it? They may well ask, that Massachusetts accent. They may well ask, why climb the highest mountain? Why 35 years ago? Okay, now almost 95. Why 35 years ago fly the Atlantic? Why does Rice play Texas? We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Remember that? Because that goal, he said, will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we are willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one which we intend to win, and the others too. Love that speech. I was only 3 years old at the time, but I would have loved to have been there as an adult and heard that. That must have been something. But did you notice the principle that was found there? We chose to go to the moon and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard, he said. Because they are hard. Deliberately choosing the more difficult path. Why do such a crazy thing? Why sit on a wooden crate when you can relax in a nice leather chair, right? Because more often than not, the more difficult the task, the greater the payoff, the greater the reward, and the greater the growth and progress. Not simply for some stoic concept of doing the difficult thing for difficulty's sake. I suppose that would be really the only motivation that I could think of for sitting on a wooden crate instead of a leather chair. What's the point? No, it's not that. Rather, we choose the more difficult things on purpose for the sake of the positive changes that will come about as a result of doing the difficult thing. We choose to go to the moon. No pain, no gain. And so while this concept might make for great rhetoric and even soaring presidential speeches, maybe even for a few extra muscles and dollars, what does this idea of no pain, no gain have to do with the Bible and the Christian life? I mean, because we are not gathered at Rice University this morning, we're gathered in church, right? So how does this idea of no pain, no gain relate to making progress in holiness and sanctification? Well, I think the answer is obvious, is it not? Especially if you were paying attention to our scripture reading this morning. Let me read just one of the verses from that passage for you again, or you can read it for yourself on the screen here. Hebrews 12:11. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. There's no two ways around it, friend. Biblical discipline or training, I think maybe really education is the better word, but we'll say more about that in a moment. this biblical discipline happens in the context of pain, or even, if you will, sorrow and heaviness. That's kind of the meaning behind the word. In other words, it is hard, as President Kennedy said. It is difficult. Not mildly so either, but excruciatingly so sometimes. But our text tells us, you can see it right here, that the result is righteousness and what? Peace. Peace for those who go through the exercise and grow as a result. No pain, no gain? Yes. But also, remember, with temporary pain comes great and lasting gain. And that's what really we need to realize and focus on, and what I'd like for us to do this morning. So let me give you the thrust of my message in one short phrase, and you can see it on the screen. Short-term pain leads to long-term benefits. Think of it in that way. And I think that's really kind of the idea that the author of Hebrews is bringing out when he talks about it as a harvest of righteousness. Got a lot of people who are farmers or who have been involved in farming at one time or another, and you know that that's the end game. And so we'll talk about that more, but I want you to zero in on this idea that the pain really is short term. The benefits, the gain, long term. But let's not try to dance around this. Let's not try to put makeup on a pig. That might be a poor analogy. What I mean is we need to face this full square in the face and recognize, and you'll see it on your screen right now, it is this. Discipline is painful. Okay? Not merely slightly unpleasant. Not simply an annoyance, like a mosquito buzzing around your head, you know, trying to get it. No, it's even worse than that. It is painful. Let's admit it and see it straight up. Reminds me of that line in that movie, The Princess Bride, right? Life is pain, Highness. Anyone who says otherwise is selling something. That might seem like a rather dark view of the world. Kind of cynical, perhaps. And I don't know that I would want to go that far, but certainly it is true that in life, especially the Christian life, the forward-moving Christian life, life is pain. Discipline is painful. The thing is maybe the word discipline isn't the best word to use. Far be it from me to take on the translators of the NIV. I'm not worthy to unbuckle their shoes, right? Okay. So if a dog can howl at the moon, I will say this, that maybe discipline isn't the best word to use to translate it. So what are our options? Well, chastening to me is worse. So sorry, those of you who love the King James. In this instance, no. Chastening only makes it sound worse. The Greek word is paideia. And you might say, okay, big deal, what's that mean, Mr. Scholar Boy? It means this. It comes from a root word meaning child. Pediatrics, right? It comes from this Greek word paideia, or at least paideo. And in this case, it refers more to the education of children. Our word pedagogy, for instance, which is the theory and practice of education, and reaches even to college course and doctoral studies, okay, comes from this word. So it doesn't just simply apply to what we might think of as infants and children. It is a concept of teaching and training and education that goes as far as we can take it. And that's the word that the writer to Hebrews uses. So perhaps a better word might be education. So how would it be put? No education is pleasant for the moment, but painful. Yeah, see, kids can use that one. Oh, we got to go to school. School is hard. It's painful. Oh, you're exaggerating. Nope, the pastor said so. Sorry. But I don't know that the word education necessarily and accurately conveys the concept of pain that's involved. I mean, really? The struggle and the anxiety that comes from learning something new and hard, maybe, but especially when it involves more than just mere intellectual acquisition. Instead, if your learning slash training is taking on actual personal integration of the concepts you're learning, you see, that's when it starts to get painful. Maybe it's kind of more of the application of the education, and more than just learning facts and figures, it is retraining, reframing, reshaping your worldview and your understanding of life and of yourself and of your relationships and all of these things. And guess what? That's hard. It's painful. So I don't know what we should call it. Educational training? Learning competencies and discipline? All right. Maybe we'll stick with the NIV. No discipline seems pleasant at the time. The discipline of learning brings pain. It is hard, and it is painful, and it hurts to realize that your past practices and viewpoints have been wrong or incomplete. You ever get to that place where you do sort of a personal inventory and you kind of recheck yourself and you think back on past relationships, raising kids, relationships at work or at home, and just whatever that, your practices, your viewpoints, your way of looking at things, you realize that at best maybe they were incomplete, maybe just flat out wrong. Or worse, maybe perhaps even harmful. Huh? And it's hard for us to face, it's very painful for us to recognize and to admit that we actually do have weaknesses and deficits that need addressing and correcting. Okay, when you really start to dig into that kind of stuff, let me tell you something. It's painful. The year that I just, thank God, finished, oh, I'm so happy I can say that. I'm not going back to Ohio ever again, okay? I know, I'm sorry. No, just, you know, Columbus represents pain for me. It was a whole year of what they call the clinical method of learning in clinical pastoral education, CPE and chaplaining and the residency that was involved. But the clinical method of learning is this. It's important to grasp this, and it took me about halfway through the program to really understand it, but it's quite simple. The clinical method of learning begins with an action, your action. But then it involves feedback. And usually there's another word to modify that goes before it. The word is critical. And already we're going, okay, no thanks, right? Do you willingly offer yourself up to be sliced and diced? Because that's what it feels like sometimes is you report on what we used to call verbatims, encounters with patients, and had to do all of this self-analysis and all this. And then you present it to your peers and educator, and then they have a field day with you. That's what it feels like. Because they are offering to you critical feedback. Don, why did you say that? What was going on in your head? Who got into that room with you? Did you get in your own way? Why are you responding this way? Do you really think the patient was thinking that? It could have been this. And you sometimes you go, come on, you're picking on me. Well, that just, you don't want to do that. That just creates more problems. You have to say, huh. And that's the next step after feedback is reflection. And you think about it and you go, oh, you know, I didn't see it at the time, but maybe you're right. Maybe I should have done this. Oh, that was wrong. Oh, this got in the way. Now think about that as you do that with your life and you reflect back on actions you've taken in the past, words you have spoken, things you have done, and you say, maybe that wasn't the best way to go about it. Let me tell you something. Not only is it sometimes embarrassing, can I even use the word shameful? Sure, depending on what it is. It all equals out to this. It is painful. It's hard. It's difficult. And then after you reflect, hopefully next time you do something different. So this is what it comes down to, really, is you don't want to avoid uncomfortable or even painful growth challenges, but that's the path of least resistance. And it feels like, doesn't it? Doesn't it feel like it? That maybe that's kind of how we're all hardwired, right? Who naturally wants to run into a concrete wall when you can just go through the blades of grass instead, right? It's so much easier. Who purposely chooses the other things not because they are easy, but because they are hard? Who does that? So that is a challenge for us. Do not avoid uncomfortable or even painful growth challenges. Are you pain avoidant? No one likes the path of pain. But if we always take the easy path, we will never make any substantive advances. That's the thing we have to recognize. Do you want to be better? Does this relate to our growth in holiness and sanctification? You bet your life it does. But it doesn't come through making decisions to go the easy way every single time. You will never grow. You will never make those substantive advances in your life. So that you get where I am, 62 years of age, and say, why didn't I know this stuff when I was 30? It could have made a difference. And there's part of the pain, the regret. Did you know that always taking the easy way is actually a form of laziness? And nobody wants to be told that they're lazy, right? You know your problem is you're lazy. I beg your pardon. Right? I mean, it's like, really? You want it? We'll go there. That's our initial reaction. Stay with me for a second, though. You've heard of the word indolence, right? We don't use it very much anymore, indolence. You've heard, certainly if you've read your Bible, you've heard the word sluggard. Go to the ant, thou sluggard, right? Consider her ways and be wise. And we've been enjoined against slothfulness, and so we hear about sloth, and these are all bad things. They're really just kind of sort of synonyms for indolence, and indolence means to avoid certain activities. I find it interesting, too, that one of the definitions of indolence can be a state of indecision. Interesting, huh? And you thought indolence just meant laziness. Well, laziness of a sort, if you just kind of stuck there in indecision and you're avoiding certain things because they are hard. In other words, my friend, it is possible to be very busy at not doing the thing that needs to be done. Right? Now, we've all been there. We've all done that. We see this thing over there that needs to be done, and it's sort of nagging us, and it's almost like sometimes hollering, hey, don't forget me. You got to take care of me. And it's like, oh, I know, but you're not very fun. It's kind of hard and difficult. So I know I'll keep busy with all of these other things over here, and you can spend a whole day just being busy, not doing the thing that needs to be done. That's what I'm talking about in that form of laziness. Laziness in the sense of avoiding the difficult, the painful, the uncomfortable. And sometimes that's how we act in our whole lives. We just take the path of least resistance, and when we are challenged with critical feedback, rather than reflecting upon it, we react against it and say, no, you misunderstand me. One of the things I learned, I'm sorry, I don't want to make this all about me, but yeah, I'm the one that's talking, so this is what's in my head. I'm remembering these things. One of the things I learned when we studied what was called family systems theory, that sounds all esoteric, doesn't it? It's very practical, though. In learning family systems theory, I connected some dots. Growing up, there would be different times where, you know, I would begin an argument with a brother or sister, or my mom would be getting after me about something, and my dad would be hearing it, and finally he'd had enough, and he would say, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I would feel misunderstood. I would feel like, those weren't my intentions. No, I didn't say that. And so my response would be, but Dad, And he would always say this. I mean, I can see his face. You can, of course, but I can see his face. Don't but dad me. He would say that every time. Don't but dad me. But dad. Go. And I would cry because I was frustrated and couldn't be understood. I mean, this went even into my teen years. Imagine the embarrassment of a 16-year-old who's supposed to be a man, right? But dad! Ah! And I realized that anxiety I have carried with me all of my life. And so there are times when, pick your poison, pick the situation. It can be a church business meeting. Those are fun times, right? Or at work, or some other thing, one of 1,000 possible scenarios, and somebody says something, and suddenly you feel like, no, you've misunderstood me. That's not what I meant at all. You've misunderstood my intentions. No, that's not what I said. And suddenly I found within myself this great anxiety building up, and I had another but dad moment. And so when they're slicing and dicing me, instead of being reflective, I became defensive. And it was very painful to recognize that's what was going on. Hard. It's hard to reflect. So much easier to take the easy path, but we cannot avoid the painful thing if we expect to grow. So here's the principle. Put it up on the screen for you. Here's the principle that we're trying to get across. I will never go back to avoiding something I know I need to do just because it is going to be painful. Now, that's kind of a mouthful, I know. And this actually comes from a book by Henry Cloud. You might have recognized him as an author. Pretty good author. He's got a book called 10 Things You'll Never Do Again. And this is one of them. This was it. I will never do this again. I will never go back to avoiding something I know I need to do just because it is going to be painful. No discipline is pleasant at the time, but painful, says the Word of God. So to illustrate this point, I want to give you a study in contrasts. Meet Jennifer. Jennifer was a salesperson who loved helping people, and really she wanted to be in the healing profession. But when she looked into it, she found that it would require going to night school to get her prerequisites, and then go through a nursing program, and this would require a couple of years. That's a real challenge. She did not relish the thought of being a student again. She would have to work as well as study. That's hard. But on the other side of that time-limited pain was the career she dreamed of. Yet she did not pursue her dream. Why? Because it would be a season of discomfort and relative chaos for her life. How's it going? I asked Stephen. I can't even begin to tell you, he said. I had to go through some very hard times, but now I feel the most alive I have ever felt. What do you mean? I asked. Well, remember when I told you that I was making the move to get my financial advisor licenses so I could become a certified financial advisor? Yes, I do. Well, you were worried about how much work it was going to be and about the shift in professions. I was. And now that I have completed it, I can tell you my concerns were legitimate. I like that honesty. My concerns were legitimate. The change was very hard, but it was the best thing I ever did. I love my work now. I have my licenses, got hired by a great firm, and I'm actually doing the work I always wanted to do. It's not easy, but it is exactly what I want to be doing. What was the difference between Jennifer and Steve? Jennifer could not go through the short-term, time-limited, painful step required to get to where she wanted to be. Steve did. What are you going to do? So here's the thing we need to remember, too. We know the principle. I will never go back to avoiding something I know I need to do just because it is going to be painful. That's sort of stating in a sort of a negative context. It's true and we can't avoid it, but this is what I want you to see. We'll put this up on the screen. It's this. Discipline's payoff is a harvest of righteousness and peace. We've been talking a lot about pain, but let's focus on the end game, the reason why all of this is important. Let's look at Hebrews 12 and verse 11 again. Put that up on the screen. Okay, let's see it again. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. We got that? We just hammered that a bit. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. Ah, the harvest. You know about that, don't you? That's the end game. That's the goal. After all the plowing of the fields, after all of the planting, of all of the watering and the fertilizing and all of the weed control that you've got to engage in, this hard and painful work results in, hopefully, a healthy and bountiful crop. The harvest is what we're going for. And so in the same way, our investment in the hard work of learning and in the pain of discipline results in a harvest of righteousness. I always have to say it that way. Has anybody here ever heard of Dr. David Martin Lloyd-Jones, famous Presbyterian preacher? Oh, come on, are you serious? All right, I've got to buy everybody a book, at least one book by this guy. He was amazing. Or better yet, I'll get you some audio. Listen to him preach at Westminster. He died in 1986, I think, so don't feel bad if you never heard of him. But he was something else. When you listen to him preach, all right, you all know who Inspector Clouseau is, right? From the Pink Panther, okay? Sorry, Lloyd-Jones sounds a lot like him. Sorry, he just does. Do we begin again to commend ourselves, he says. That sounds like, okay, I expect him to say, Swain phone any second, but thankfully he doesn't. But every time he said righteousness, he would say it like that. So when I read it, when I see it, I'm just stuck in Lloyd-Jones mode. This painful discipline produces a harvest of righteousness. What does that mean? In our English language, our first glance at that, we might think, oh, righteousness, holiness. You know, I'm now a much more righteous person. Ah, hold on. Because actually, the Greek word, which I won't say now, is a word that is often translated as justification. The same Greek word. You know Romans 5, therefore, no, that's sorry, that's Romans 8. Romans 5, having been justified by faith, we could, it wouldn't make much sense grammatically, but we could throw in there, having been righteousness-ified. What? Is that a word? No. Let's stick with justified. By faith. Same words, synonyms. What is justification? We all took our little theology lessons, I'm sure, and we all remember that justification means to be declared righteous, right? To be declared righteous, and that's what God does when we come to Him by faith in His Son, Jesus Christ, believing that when He shed His blood on the cross, He did it for me. I receive that by faith, and God says, you are righteous. I am declaring this to be so, not on your own merits, but on the merits of my Son. Wonderful gospel truth. We love it. We rejoice in it. We live there. Okay, that's the same word that the writer to Hebrews uses here and says that this painful, hard, uncomfortable discipline brings about a harvest of justification, of being declared righteous. Okay, hold on now. I don't think this is intellectual or biblical gymnastics. I think this is an understanding of what the passage is saying. If it is saying that the hard work of discipline results in us being declared righteous, who's making the declaring here? I think it is those around us who sees the harvest of our lives after going through the painful discipline. In other words, they look at your life and they say, wow, I can see a change. And there's kind of a certain moral authority about these things that you're speaking on now because you've lived it. You've gone through this. You have gone through the painful, hard, uncomfortable work. And what you say now has a certain degree of authority and legitimacy to it. That's all bound up in the concept of saying, there's a righteous dude. Well, okay. maybe not quite that way, but there is a person that I can respect. You are, in essence, justifying that person. You are declaring them as righteous. Somebody that because you have learned the discipline, you carry a certain degree of authority with you now on the basis of those hard lessons you have learned and the change that has come about. So yeah, it's painful at the time, it's hard, but guess what the end game is? It's a harvest of that kind of respect, that kind of understanding from people who says there's somebody who's been through it and they can see it, they can tell. And that's pretty gratifying, let me tell you. That's pretty cool. But our investment also in the hard work of learning and in the pain of discipline results in, what does it say? A harvest of righteousness and peace. Oh, I love that. It results in peace. A peace, I think, first of all, that's in yourself. What we in CPE learned to call a non-anxious presence. Doesn't that sound fancy schmancy? But I think it's a great way of describing it. A non-anxious presence. Let me tell you something. When I went there, I was, my one educator referred to me as an anxious ball of energy. Yeah, there's a lot of anxiety and insecurity there, but to be able at the end of that to come out the other side with this sense of peace. You exude this sense of peacefulness, this non-anxious presence. Not perfectly, not all the time, but certainly it marks you now. That's the harvest. And so we mature and we mellow as we humbly go through our learning time of discipline. And so let's look at that principle again up on the screen and remind ourselves, I will never go back to avoiding something I know I need to do just because it is going to be painful. Let me give you a few stories to illustrate this and then we'll wrap it up. My son-in-law, Mark, he struggled with dyslexia all through elementary, junior high, and high school, probably before they even had a word for it, had difficulty spelling. It took him over 6 years to get his undergraduate degree, but he actually got it, that bachelor's degree he finally got in college. So you think, okay, well, good. Whew. As his father-in-law, you breathe a little bit. You go, that's good. He accomplished it. It blew my mind that a few years after that, he and my daughter and their two, at the time, very young children, I think they were like 4 and 2 or 3 and 1, something like that, they all packed up and moved all the way out to Denver, Colorado, so that he could attend seminary there at Denver Seminary. My son-in-law, the one with dyslexia, the one who took 6 years to get an undergraduate degree, said, I'm going to go to seminary next. And I wanted to say, are you flipping crazy? Do you know what that involves? All of the mind work and this stuff, and you are learning challenged, and you're... Oh, God bless you, Mark. Go. And he did. He felt God calling him to pastoral ministry, and he was willing to go through what was for him literal pain and humiliation of academics, of academic study. He was willing to go through that pain again in order to reach his goal. Now, thankfully for him, his English major wife helped him by editing his papers for him, but still, he did the work. And I remember when he went, he said, no, I'm not interested in being a preaching pastor. No, so he wanted to focus on discipleship, and his degree was related to that, pastoral ministry and discipleship. But he remained willing to step into the uncomfortable. And now guess what? Now he is an experienced preaching pastor. And he's being groomed, as a matter of fact, to become the lead pastor in a fairly large church right here in West Michigan once the founding pastor, Don said, finally retires. He did it. He was willing to go to the uncomfortable, the hard, the painful, and what a harvest it has produced. Now, my friend Jack was content with being a farmer over in eastern Michigan. It was all that he had done for pretty much his entire life, apart from college, where he studied, you guessed it, agriculture and farming. But he later felt the call of God on his life to be a pastor. And even though he says he never felt much like a theologian, he left the familiar and the known, that easy path, and he moved to a foreign country. Okay, it was Canada, but still, you know. They do have a different language there, eh? So, he attended seminary in Toronto. And his wife, Becky, was the cook for the school so that he could earn his Master of Divinity, with both of them all the while continuing to care for their three kids. And Jack's harvest was a successful pastorate of teaching and investing in people's lives in the same church for many years. Think about that kind of a harvest for a person who would really just rather be a farmer. I don't want to embarrass her, but I've got to tell you the story. My wife Monica did the same thing as Becky did so that I could go to seminary way over there in that same foreign country in Toronto. She also cooked for the school full-time and homeschooled our four children at the same time. And then several years later, she began her own undergraduate studies at the age of 40. Can you imagine starting college at the age of 40? I thought I was crazy when I did it at age 29. She started at age 40, and then she got her teaching degree. And after a year of that, felt that her real calling and desire was in the field of counseling. So, she invested 2.5 more years in seminary, and at the age of 50, began her career as a professional counselor. At the age of 50, specializing in the field of neurofeedback therapy. And her full-time work later made it financially possible for me to be able to leave our home and family and move 4.5 hours away to Purgatory, also known as Columbus, Ohio, so that I could experience the most painful and rewarding year of my life as a chaplain resident, and now hopefully begin a new career at the young age of 62. Having done the painful and difficult work of dealing with my own stuff during this past year, to lose much of that anxiety and insecurity that I told you about, that had been dominated by the fear of failure and of rejection. These personal changes were hard, but oh, the harvest of peace. I won't do it again, but I'd do it again. What I mean is I'm glad I did. And so maybe it's time for you to do what is uncomfortable, perhaps even painful, in order to do what you know needs to be done. I don't know. This is one of the benefits of not really knowing you all that well. The last time I was here was in March. That was during Lent. That feels like a lifetime ago, doesn't it? So I don't know. I'm not looking at anybody in particular and knowing this is your situation, but perhaps for you it might mean investing in saving your marriage by swallowing your pride and going to counseling, doing the hard work of being willing to admit your part in the breakdown and being ready to make the changes you need to make. That's not easy. It's hard. It's humbling. Sometimes it's even shameful. But you're willing to do the hard work because there's a harvest, there's an end game. Maybe it's time for you to be willing to go through the pain and even the humiliation of admitting to an accountability partner or perhaps even a counselor that yes, you are addicted to pornography and you're now ready to do the hard work of breaking those chains. It begins with admitting it. Someone you can trust. Or maybe it's, I want to say simply, but it's not so simple. It's hard and it's painful. Maybe it's beginning the new discipline of getting up earlier in order to find time to read the scriptures or pray. Now let me just say this. You don't have to get up at 4 in the morning when 6 will do. Okay? You don't have to kill yourself. It's going to be hard enough as it is. Maybe it's And maybe for you it's not getting up early in the morning. Maybe it's staying up later at night. You know your own body and your own ways of doing things, but if you say to yourself, I'm going to do this. It's hard. It's a new discipline. It's something that's going to be uncomfortable, but I'm going to do it because the harvest is worth it. Just simply being willing to endure the discomfort, to do the hard work that is necessary in order for you to fulfill what you know God is calling you to do. What you know that you really want to do. Because there's a harvest that's waiting for you. Let me close with this quote from Henry Cloud again in that book, 10 Things You'll Never Do Again. He says this, as many, many successful people in relationships and in business, okay, this is not a Norman Vincent Peale, you know, talking about how to be a good business. Sure, there are principles that apply there, right? And going to school to better yourself, it's hard, but it's worth it. I'll just say that. But people who are successful in relationships get there the same way, by doing what they do, not because it is easy, but because it is hard. They're willing to endure the difficult. So this is what he says. As many, many successful people in relationships and in business have told me, making the change was a lot harder than they thought it would be. I want you to hear that. Because too often I think we say to ourselves, you know, once you get into it and you do it, you're going to say, you know what, this isn't so bad. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Don't fool yourself. In fact, you know what? It's worse than you think it is. It's harder than you think it is. It is more humbling. It is more life-changing. It is more transformative than you could have ever thought possible. So they've told me making the change was a lot harder than they thought it would be. But as soon as it was done, they asked themselves, so why didn't I do this? Why not? Indeed. Let's pray. Father, I ask that you will make your divine imprint of these words upon our heart as we look into your word and understand that no discipline is pleasant at the time, but it is painful. But afterwards, it produces a harvestness of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. God, help us to be willing to do those things, to be willing to endure, to be uncomfortable, and to feel the pain, because we know that there is a great harvest of righteousness and peace awaiting us. To be more like you, to be more like your Son, who is our divine example, and to whom we are told to cast our eyes, to fix our gaze. Because he, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross and scorned its shame because he looked to the reward. And so, Father, help us to follow his example, to be willing to go through the pain of discipline so that we can be better people for the glory of God, for your glory, and for the sake of your kingdom, and for people around the world. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.